For those who do want to start a business, it is one of the most exciting things I've ever done in my life.
Hello, construction industry professionals. You're listening to The Art of Construction, specifically designed for contractors and architects to help grow your business. Here are your hosts, Devin and Kevin.
All right, Kevin, we're going to dive in and have a chat with some fellow podcasters as well as architects. This one's going to be fun to have the founders of F9 Productions, Lance Psycho and Alex Gore.
No, I'm excited about it because not only do they have a podcast that's pretty awesome, but they are, you know, practicing architects, design builders, and just really have and instructors at CU Boulder too in the world of architecture. So pretty good mixture of information and data to share with our listeners today.
Yeah, and as listening to their podcast, go check out Inside the Firm podcast. They moved out here from Fargo, North Dakota, like me, that both run a podcast in Colorado. So we're all Bison fans, and now they're professors at CU and go Buffs. Oh my goodness, we're gonna get in trouble together. We're gonna have some fun.
You betcha.
So all right, here we go. Let's dive in and have a chat. We're gonna start off with Lance on the speed round.
Here we go.
What's your favorite beverage?
A favorite beverage is red wine, specifically Malbec.
Malbec, man that knows what he wants.
Yeah, Argentinian red. You can't go wrong.
There you go. Tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
Favorite place has been New York City. Went there twice last year, once to receive an award, and the other just on pleasure. Love New York. It's the mecca of architecture.
Architecture award. You better tell us about what the award was.
So we won a international architecture award with Architizer. It was for our tiny house. Really proud of that. We both got to look like big shots on the red carpet.
I'm excited to peel back the onion about that. But first, what's your favorite hobby or interest outside of the construction arena?
I have a big family, and I'm a busy guy because we do a podcast, we run a business, we teach at the University of Colorado Boulder. And so when I do have free time, it is spending time with my four kids and my wonderful fiance.
Nice.
Fiance. Well, you just got a lot on your plate, my friend. I love it. I can relate a bit to that. So we got to know a little bit about Lance, and we have two people in the studio AOC today. Next, Alex, you got to hear the speed round question, so you can really knock it out of the park. So Alex Gore, what's your favorite beverage?
I have two. One is Wibby. It's a light shine hella. It's in Longmont. It's awesome. The second one is Bud Light. And people make fun of me for it a lot. And I was working out in the field.
Are you from North Dakota or something? We don't have Wibbies up there, my man.
they always make, they say, oh, you want beer flavored water. And you know, it's a hard day. I'm like, there's water that tastes like beer? That sounds refreshing and delicious. I'll take two.
So, oh, my goodness. That's fantastic. Tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
Well, I have to rip on Lance first because he said New York. And I moved to New York when I got out of college to work for a firm there. And I kept trying to convince him to come. And I go, every time you step outside, you'll be in New York. And he wouldn't listen to me. And now when he travels there, he's like, he thinks it's the greatest thing. So I would say shout out to Bruges in Brussels, which was amazing. And then Bien region in Germany. We went there for the army. And then they let us out every weekend. And of course we drank and all that. And it what was so cool about it was the World Cup was there. And we went to Munich, and there was the Hofenbräuhaus house, which is a famous brewery there. And it was England versus Spain, and they all had their flags as capes on. Everyone was just blitz. It was just the contrast between like working hard, you know, doing field stuff, and then being let out in beautiful Germany. It was just something for, you know, an 18-year-old, 20-year-old.
That sounds memorable for sure. Is your favorite hobby or interest outside of the construction arena?
I'll be stereotypical. We just got passes last year, my wife, and now we have a kid to the Rocky Mountain National Park. And I've lived here for 7 years, and it's the first time we went up there. And we went every single weekend. So the kid was born in October, and now we've been going back, and it's just beautiful up there.
Excellent. So we got to know a little bit about Lance and Alex, and it sounds to me like that good old accent may come out from Devin, who moved out here from Fargo, North Dakota to go to college.
Don't you know?
Don't you know? You betcha. Yeah. Yeah. So tell us your story. We're going to start off by Alex. Say, how did you guys meet?
So I met Lance. It's Lance Psycho, like the crazy person, instead of, you know, people call him Keiko.
Don't forget it.
Yeah. We met in college, and we instantly, I think I just didn't like him.
I also did not like Alex.
He loved me. He loved me. And we were kind of rivals for a while, trying to best each other. And then about third year, we decided to team up. And we did this I think was this great skyscraper project, finally in fourth year, which was a high rise in San Francisco. Everyone got to go down. And we basically, it was supposed to be a sustainable skyscraper. So instead of just adding solar panels or something like that, we asked, what if a building could grow? So we did cool things like we tapered it so that for stability. Then we rotated it so that it could capture the sun. Then we lit it so it could capture the sun. Then we rotated it so it could capture the wind power and then the fog. And you can capture fog and it turns it into water. And then in between the skins on that south side was plants, and plants filter, you know, air. So essentially it became a giant filter for the city. And then from there, I think we just, I don't know, always liked hanging out.
So where was this that you hung out?
In school.
Yeah.
In Fargo.
Fargo.
I can just tell. You just say it.
You got to represent, man. There's not enough of us around. So when you meet one, you got to talk about it.
Yeah.
For sure. All right. So next, you guys went to school at NDSU, and then you met, and then you moved out to Colorado and started a company together, correct?
Correct.
So next, Lance, tell us the story of the evolution of your company and what that's all about.
So Alex and I have the classic story of starting a business from scratch, except that we weren't in a garage. We were actually in Alex's unfurnished apartment, which is really close to a garage at that point. Alex was first working for Daniel Liebskin out in New York City. He got laid off. I got laid off from the Studio HT of Firm in Boulder. While Alex got laid off, then he went back to grad school. And during that time, I had two kids to feed at that time. I kind of fell back on my construction experience, started doing handyman work. And then through that landed a couple of little remodel projects, eventually a big house, a clinic, which I teamed up with the old architects with. Had enough work, I said, Alex, you should just come out here because it looks like the recession is not going to stop anytime soon. So Alex came out. We started doing work together. We started the business just doing building information modeling, which is really boring stuff, but it paid pretty well. So we did stuff like windows, doors, flooring, materials, all of those kinds of things. And then eventually we just started landing little commissions after little commissions after little commissions. And it was Alex and I, just primarily as the owners and workers at our firm for, I think, 4 years, 5 years, until we finally ended up getting enough work where we could hire somebody full time. And then from there, we've grown from 2 to 8, you know, from 2009 to 2017. It's been an extraordinary run. From 2013 to 2017 is when we saw the most growth. And since then, we've been on HGTV. We've built a couple tiny houses. We're now in a position where we are hopefully developers, at least on that path. We bought a third of an acre up in Longmont where we're headquartered at. And we're looking to do 8 condos and hopefully a commercial space.
What a story. And it was so fun today when Lance walked into my little window and door company, Mountain View Window and Door. And we look at each other and it's like we know each other because we met through, oh, you run a podcast, I run a podcast, you're from Fargo. So there was those connections, but yet now I've listened to a half a dozen of their shows on their podcast. It's called Inside the Firm. So they've been peeling back the onion and telling their story about them, as well as they've went back and listened to The Art of Construction. So the thing, folks, it's a different world. It's not about back in the day when the person selling it held all the cards. You know, and you can vet and understand people before you physically meet them in person. It can be a really good thing or it can be a really bad thing. And it was a lot of fun to meet you guys in person today and excited to talk about your guys' business, what you do day to day. So I commend you guys for taking the plunge. You know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, and starting and building this thing up. So let's talk about design, build, and how BIM and how the tiny houses, how your teachers at CU, let's go through that stuff. So Kevin, let's get the conversation going, my friend.
So your main focus is F9 Productions, correct? That's your main business. And the primary focus of your firm is design, build, architecture. So talk a little bit about how you kind of differentiate yourself from everybody else out there so our listeners can kind of get a feel for that.
I think we differentiate ourselves by just having construction experience. So Lance started, 15, 14?
13. He never gets the number right.
Because it's hard
but
to believe.
I love it.
Yeah, because it's so hard to believe. So he was building houses back when he was 13. And then I was in the National Guard and construction company. So we were building roads, blowing up things in Alaska, things like that. So what we like to do is boil everything down to the fundamentals. And then I think you can build up from there. So even we take that construction experience and then we relate it to the BIM work that we do. So how we model in, it's mainly Revit that we use, is we model like it'd be built. So the way that we do our floor boxes, how we do the framing wall first, because that's the first thing that goes up. And then your skin and your facade comes later. So they're separate systems. And also that facade wall goes over your floor box. So it's easier to kind of separate those, compartmentalize them. And what we learned from that too is, you know, now we teach at CU is not only are we teaching kids how to model, but we're essentially teaching them how to build at the same time because it mimics the process. And I think that allows them to get confident more quicker. And then I think it allows us to collaborate with construction people more because nothing is a lie. It's no longer lines or anything like that. It's all real world. We can come together confidently to figure out what needs to happen without trying to hide behind notes or anything like that.
And, you know, we've taken it even a step beyond that. So, you know, starting with the fundamentals, like Alex said, we kind of frame and do the foundations and everything first. What we've went a step further in that, we've started modeling structural members, some angled columns, to the point where technically they're shop drawings. So even though we're in the design phase, we're producing shop drawings at that point so people can accurately bid in what we're doing. We're sort of testing what we're doing before we build them, which was very important when we came down to do our first two design build projects, which were two tiny houses, well, three total. But they had a lot of moving parts in them. So Alex did a lot of engineering, so to speak, on how these folding walls and awnings would actually work with the structure. So he was test fitting things in the models in 3D before they even got fabricated. Now, that didn't stop from him losing any sleep with the whole process. But it definitely gave us a little bit more confidence in creating, you know, these transforming tiny houses that are never been done before. And we were stepping into, you know, an area that was sort of like scary in that way.
Yeah. And sorry, just to give you a little visual of what he's talking about, these tiny houses aren't your traditional just wood looking like a cabin. They're more modern. And what we have is one side is a whole glass wall. And then we have a deck that folds down and then an awning that folds up. And on the bigger, the last two that we made, we had a sky deck. The railings fold in and then it folds down. So when it's going down the road, you know, it doesn't blow off. So it was crazy. And out of all these moving pieces for all these, I only got one thing wrong that didn't work is over the wheel well, we have this cap and I placed it in there and it was, you know, 8 inches too long. And I was like, okay, well, at least we can just cut that, you know, weld it together. So many things could have gone terrible, but they did not.
Well, that's a perfect example of what we've always talked about on the Art of Construction since the beginning is the importance of getting it right on paper. And even with more traditional architecture or the process being traditional, so many times people wait until it's under construction to make adjustments and fine-tune it. It gets so expensive and costly and frustrating for everybody. And what you're doing is the perfection of that, if you will, meaning that you're doing it all on paper or really, you know, digitally first to get an idea of exactly how things are going to go. So in an example of that project, only having one item that didn't fit, think of all the projects out there that get built that only have one thing be just a little bit off. I mean, that's pretty incredible. And I think that's one of the things that is missed a lot of times is what the benefits to the ultimate end user are. It saves time, saves money, saves frustration. They know what they want before you start the process. And then the other thing that you mentioned, Lance, which is really important, is that for all of us being on the trade side, when we're looking at a set of your plans, we know what we're bidding. A lot of times we have to sit there and redesign and reconfigure because, you know, in our world of windows and doors, a lot of times the way it's designed, you either can't build it or you can't quite build it the way they've designed it. So we have to get involved in that, which we do and make recommendations. But you've gone to that extra effort to get it all done correctly to begin with to help everybody along the way.
Yeah. And a lot of it actually, so we also run another website. It's called RevitFurniture.com. And what that is it's basically our an online version of the course we teach at CU Boulder to teach how to use Revit in the way that we do so that other people can learn from us, hopefully, and then, you know, ultimately help with the construction industry to get more accurate and better and all that stuff. But it's effortless. Some of the extra drawings that we're doing are effortless because we've already saved time on the design side of everything, and the construction documentation because of this template we have set up, right? So a lot of times our drawing sets for just custom homes, which is our primary shtick, range between 20 and 30 drawing sheets, which is usually double what I think a lot of other architecture or design firms are putting out there. But we're able to do that, and a lot of the extra sheets are building sections or just call-outs. Because in Revit, you know, to get detailed, the idea is if I can copy the detailing of that section and just move it over, throw it on a sheet, and I have another one ready to go. Like the multiplication factor of the thing, once you have it set up and ready to go from the get-go, it's been phenomenal in that way.
And it's hard to convey, especially when you're trying to get work from developers, because the final result is on paper. So they think it's just lines. So and what we're really doing is when it's in the computer, it's real world scale. So when it's 10 feet, it's actually 10 feet. It's only when you put it on a sheet that a scale is applied. So we're modeling the whole building. And that's where Lance is talking about, is if you cut a section, it's all there. So all that information will pop up. What's hard to get across is they'll say, oh, hey, move this wall or move this whatever. And I've even had them say, it's just lines. And in my head, what comes to mind is, no, this is a whole building. Imagine if you wanted to move a wall in a whole building 10 feet. So you have to grab the foundation. It's going to destroy. It's literally like destroying what was there. You have to, the floor that you had, all the beams that you had now need to shrink. So me moving a wall 10 feet is actually a big deal, because in the end, everything is going to be correct again. It's hard to convey that, but if you can think about it that way, whatever you're doing in Revit is like you're a god in the real world, you know. But the model will break. It will break, and that's okay, because you need to fix it because you're modeling like it's built.
And that's the whole point of it. It's a lot less expensive to break it looking at a computer screen than after it's built. And the thing about construction, folks, when you talk about the art of construction, the devil's in the details, and the whole thing, the longer I play this game, the more I realize how important it is to be able to zoom in on a corner section or a detail, but then be able to zoom out and see the whole project. The developer just wants to see how much money he can make from seeing dollar signs all over the windows that you see through and how many units he can build. But the window supplier wants to be able to zoom in on the corner of that window to say it's going to hold up for 20 years so you're not in a lawsuit. And the person developing the whole system, you guys have to try to sell that package to everybody to paint the picture at the beginning and begin with the end in mind. And that's the whole process why we started the Art of Construction. Of the premise of this whole thing is that we spend day in, day out dealing with a set of plans that cannot be built, or they value engineer to where you have problems and they just move walls out in the field because and that's where the 3D modeling is so much more important than lines on a piece of paper. That, you know, the thing about construction, it's either too corporate, it's all about the money, or it's too construction. We've always done it this way. You and your fancy little Revit furniture, I don't care about that. I've been building walls for 30 years. Get the hell out of the way, because people like this are coming in and they're going to change how the design build is done, because they painted that picture in their mind how this building is going to be built. That's super valuable. Wouldn't you guys agree with that?
Yeah. I would agree. And so I've been telling Alex this. The main entity that we've done this building information modeling work has also kind of given us a pat on the back, and that he said, you know, I know a lot of other architects. And he said, you guys are one of the first ones that, as a residential firm, that really jumped on board, because it was mostly the big commercial guys. And I thought, well, that's great, but how can Alex and I try to see the next wave? Where I've been going, and what we've been talking about too on our podcast lately, is where does the 3D printing come in to factor with all of this? Because if we're already doing the 3D model, and we can take that, and we've turned several of our models into 3D printed, you know, just the plastic stuff. But at some point, I really think this industry is going to change. And whether it's just the structure or the foundations or something like that, you know, how can we be ahead of the game on that one? Because that's where I think, in my perspective, the architects and designers really will start becoming constructors just by default of technology.
Yeah, I'm going to take this to the next level. So I read an article the other day about how it was on CNN, about how Uber and
Tesla
has claimed in 3 years they're going to have pod stations, that Tesla and Uber, you just go drive your car to a pod station, and that pod will, like a helicopter, go up and fly you somewhere that currently, if it takes you 2.5 hours, will now take you 20 minutes. We that live in Colorado, you guys that live in Boulder or Longmont coming down, you guys that live in Longmont coming down here having to go through the traffic, things like that is going to change big time. When is construction going to change big time? When you go to a national AIA show and you see this genius up on the podium talking about how pouring concrete and this computer does the whole what you did in a 3D modeling in the real world, that's where it comes to be too corporate or too construction. I love peeling back the onion in these types of conversations because, man, if we had the magic wand of, say, what you guys are experts on with BIM, how that goes out into the field is pretty crazy to think about, right?
Yeah, so we're in Longmont, which is basically a suburb of Boulder, and we don't have to drive through traffic, but you guys invited us down here at 9 o'clock. Yeah. So thank you for that. So I finally got, and Denver traffic is probably nothing like LA, but I was like, Elon Musk, let's make this happen.
Yeah,
for sure. It's a tricky question, this 3D printing, because I don't think putting up sticks, you know, for regular framing is hard whatsoever. It's actually one of the quickest things. But if you look at some of the bigger buildings and what they're doing with the next wave, and Lance and I were on the cusps of this Revit, and we asked ourselves what is going to be the next wave, and we didn't see anything for a couple years. But now we're seeing generative AI design. And I don't know what the program that AutoCAD uses, but I'm sure Autodesk is the one who owns it. And if you think about bigger buildings and what they've done for drones is that everything that we have drawn up until this point, we have dictated, you know, okay, it's going to be built in Revit or whatever, but I'm actually making that movement with my hand. So now you can tell the computer, say, and you can say, hey, we need a drone. We have four, you know, helicopter blades. Come up with the best structure. And it can go through 100 different iterations until it makes the most efficient one. And then they kind of held it up, and it looked like the skeleton structure of a flying squirrel. So now when you talk about bigger buildings with steel, is that going to be the first wave where they're 3D printing the steel, and it's this crazy structure that you wouldn't even know? There's no way we could even think about it. Because
and that looks completely irrational. So I think to bring it back to the idea of this old school construction, you know, like the construction side, right? I mean, people like that, I think, are just going to look at it and go like, what are these crazy architects coming up with? When in fact, you know, you could even prove it with math that structure is perhaps, it saved money, materials, time, it's even more structurally efficient, yeah. All of those things.
And actually, we probably couldn't prove it with math. We'd say, trust the AI computer. That yeah, now
we'll print out the calcs.
the computers are becoming smarter than us, but you don't ever forget about the handshake and the fact that we're the ones driving the bus. The bus could be smarter than us, but we still got to drive that bus. And I think that's way our lifetime. There's going to be big changes. Like the internet was this big change for us, you know, and that's where you say, I'm still too construction. I still use the yellow pages. Our kids won't even know what the yellow pages are, except they go online. So it's that evolution of change, which is really fascinating.
Well, one of the things I think that's critical, you talk about that importance of the handshake. Talk a little bit about the trust factor and the confidence factor when you're dealing with custom homeowners, you know, your ultimate client, and you're providing them with this information. To me, that's going to give them a lot of confidence that, first of all, it's going to be the design they want, that it's going to fit within their budget, as opposed to, as an example, designing some great thing that they think is awesome, and yet it's 10 times what their budget is, and they don't find that out for 8 or 9 months. So talk a little bit about how the process that you're putting together provides confidence for your clients and kind of what that means, and again, differentiates you from the rest out there.
Our projects never go over budget.
Yeah, right.
No, they do. When they are done really well, though, and Jazz House is a very nice house that we've done. It's on our Facebook page, it's on our website. It's one of the most proud ones that it's one of the houses I'm most proud of that we've done so far at F9. And this is a perfect example of when the process goes well and it goes in the way I would like it to go, in terms of here's all the information we're gleaning from Revit. It at the very early stages of the design process, area calculations, instant window and door schedules, instant material takeoffs. And by the way, that's also what we've built into this template that we use at our firm, and then we sell and we actually teach with it at CU, is right away the schedules are set up, the material takeoffs are set up to be able to just take that information off. So what's important for us is when we do those custom houses that we know somebody wants a very unique design, is that A, we get them to select one of the three contractors that we recommend, or at least interview all three of the contractors right away after we have the first set of elevations, roof plans, and floor plans up, And then from there, we work with the
So I want you to just, why right away hire a contractor? I'm just curious.
So that the client can say, hey, I only want to spend $650,000. Okay, client, here is a contractor that knows the budget and he's going to work. So then we can form that perfect triangle of architecture, owner, and then contractor. And so when that happens, then we for sure, our buildings come in on budget, plus or minus, plus right? But they're at least well within the wheelhouse, and they make it so that the project can be feasible, that it's not unbuildable. And Jazz House was an excellent example of that. And then after that, we have...
Who is the builder on Jazz House?
Tinker Homes. Brian Tinker is the builder for the Jazz House. And he's now become one of our most recommended contractors. And he also really trusts what we're doing as a result of that house. That house had multiple shed roofs. It had a lot of custom steel work, angles everywhere. The floor plan was angled because of the site constraints, actually. So, and then there was also reverse brick ledges because it had to be a fully ADA home. So a lot of intricacies, a lot of complications. And because we modeled everything and tested everything beforehand, you know, we knew a lot of the things were going to be able to work in the field. But it also helped us prove to Brian that, hey, we're not those architects that just draw lines on paper and then hope that everything goes well. So there weren't a lot of field changes or anything like that. But since then, our relationship with him has deepened and grown to the point where he will confidently call us and say, you know, right away in the bid process, hey, can you give me those material takeoffs? And I can quickly, you know, his numbers are really at that point a one-to-one relationship. And we can decide, and it usually comes down to, well, we're either deleting a bunch of windows or doors or shrinking the floor plan. But, you know, the value engineering can happen.
Hey,
right
don't
away.
Go right to deleting windows.
But the point there is, you know where you're going. Between you, the contractor, and the ultimate client, the homeowner, you all know where you're going with this, as opposed to, you know, the contractor's not sure how to bid it. He's going to have to add a little fudge factor in there. So there's no fudging going on because of the confidence that the contractor has in what you're designing. And then you know where you're at. And then it's a function of how big of a check do I want to write as a homeowner? And it's like, well, that's a little too big. We need to make adjustments, or we're right on target.
Yeah, absolutely. And to actually add to that point, I just built my own house. I mean, I didn't physically build it. We hired a contractor to do it. I built a house for my family last year, and I had an open book relationship with the developer. And what was great about that is then I could see his bids from the subcontractors on how many cubic yards of concrete, and I could cross-check that with the BIM model. And everybody was held accountable. You know, I'm not sure that's a typical relationship because I was the owner and the architect. It definitely proved itself that it works.
And I think another benefit of getting the contractor in early is that they can see the process grow. They can see it from a schematic design to design development to the construction documents. So it's not like you're hitting them with that first handshake. Hey, here's a whole complicated project. You don't know where the thoughts were. You have to take in all that information at once. And I think the bids would easily, even if it was the same contractor, $100,000 more. But when he sees the logic of what's going on and how it's being built, and then finally it's hey, give us the final price, he knows everything. It's like he can 3D see through this whole building because he's seen all these models and seen the set develop.
That's such a good point to say, cut through the red tape, you know, to begin with the end in mind. And I'm you know, part of HBA and on different advisory councils, and someone will want to leave a big commercial firm and start their own company. And they always ask me, well, what should I do first? And they want to go right into making their logo and make their website and do all their traditional stuff that is secondary to. I say, surround yourself around good people that you like and trust. And as you as a contractor, if you're going to be the best contractor, find your niche and then go find architects that focus in those niche and let them help you. And then you earn that trust from them to where when they're putting a set of plans, they're going to recommend you. To be on a top three as a contractor for an architect firm is the most important thing you can do as you're building your business. And then that reputation is going to shine. And it's all about building that reputation if you're going to focus in a swim lane that I would highly recommend to find a couple of those to build your business and not try to be all things to all people. But you do also have to figure that out as you get going. If you go back to the beginning of our podcast, just like inside the firm, you kind of try a lot of things and figure it out. And I think that's a good thing, because if you don't try a lot of things and you only do one thing and you look back and say, I didn't like that, well, that's pretty shitty. So you got to figure all that stuff out. And you guys have started as just being architects to where now you're like looking at doing your own development. Tell us about what you think on as being just an architect on some projects or being a design build firm on others. Can you guys peel back the onion a little bit on that?
Yeah. What's amazing to me is that everything that we're doing now as a developer and even as being the contractor is within our wheelhouse that we've kind of already done. And I think it's in the wheelhouse of all, basically all architects too. There's probably some field experience a lot of them need, and you can get that through different ways. We told our story. I also used to go to Habitat for Humanity and just volunteer all the time. Even though we weren't doing stuff, anything complicated, you just see and you become more comfortable in that situation, which I think is great. And I think what's really holding people back is that there's this one piece of knowledge that they think that they can't do or can't attain, and that's dealing with the finances and getting the money. And I think it's only because they weren't trained in it. So in a studio culture, in an architecture school like NDSU or any other, you do design and you might do structures and stuff like that, but you never get that other part of, hey, what are the finances, how to raise money? And literally, that's probably only a 15th, a 20th of the project. And for some reason, people feel like it's outside their realm when it's not. And I guess that's probably true for also starting a business too, is that they might know windows and doors and all that stuff, but oh, how am I going to rent a space and get money to do all that? And it is something you have to learn, but it's not something that you can't learn.
But you do have to want to do it. Like being an entrepreneur and earning, being the guy running the business is very different than working for a company. It's key to finding your wheelhouse of, you know, I have my title as information entrepreneur now because I found out that's what I love is being a visionary entrepreneur and have really good people in my day-to-day life. That Kevin, that used to run his own business, and now he teaches me a ton of stuff and say, Devin, check this. Go work on this. This will get you in trouble. So somebody's working on the business while you have really good people working in the business. And that's the finding that pendulum, as you talked about how you guys were in your unfinished apartment and for 8 years doing it all on your own, to build up to hiring that first employee. That's such a big deal of the how you delegate and what you delegate. And I think that's a key when I, you know, our friends come into Studio AOC to talk about how they ventured and that windy river of what they do and how they run their business. It's all about the people at the end of the day. The technology can make the business a lot stronger, but it's the people at the end of the day, if you ask me. What would you guys say about that?
I'd say, yeah, I would totally agree with everything. And also, you don't have to start a business if you don't want to. I think that's huge. I think people always see it as this goal, but if you just like design or BIM or whatever you're doing, that's totally fine. I had a normal weekend for the first time, I think in maybe 8 years, my wife went away. And so I was just watching the baby. So everything that I'd normally do on the weekend, work, study, think about this project, I said, nope, it's just me and the baby doing baby stuff. I was like, and it was a vacation. I was like, this is amazing. I don't have to think about anything else. So
you didn't mow the lawn, though.
I did mow the lawn. Put him in the crib outside.
Yeah,
boy. Mow the lawn. So, yeah.
But for those who do want to start a business, it is one of the most exciting things I've ever done in my life. And we continually still start businesses. So every venture that we do is a new F version of a business. So F9 is our primary platform. F10 was the design build that we did last year. F11 was Alex's book. F12 is now our development project. And we've got other ideas, you know, on the horizon. We just never stop. But it is so exciting for me to actually wake up and go, oh, and, you know, and I've heard this cliche over and over again, but it's so true, is every day as an entrepreneur, you wake up unemployed, right? Because you're going out there after the next big thing or the next big sale. Sales are incredibly exciting to me, and I totally agree with you got to surround yourself with the right team. I think our very first hire was ultra critical, and we were really lucky to get that young man, and then from there it just blossomed. And since then, you know, I joke all the time with Alex that, you know, realize we've kind of built a little fraternity at F9. Everybody, you know, we do two outings every year. We do a really fun Christmas party. We rent a limo. The first time we ever did it, we surprised the guys, and it was 2 or 3 years ago, and we just said, hey, look out the window. And then they said, oh, well, what's that for? Well, we're doing the Christmas party.
Well, we asked them, you know, no one was looking out the window. We said, hey, guys, you want to go on some site visits? You know, let's just go visit some stuff. Yeah. Like, yeah, fine, woo! You know. And they weren't too excited. And then we said, look out the window, and there's a limo, and it was full of booze. I'm sure Bud Light was involved. So it's just great to have it.
That's awesome. Well, one of the things you talk about, I think, that's really, really critical in the whole business is being for particularly for architectural students and people that practice architecture is to broaden your horizons, right? It's important in any aspect of life in the business world. But one of the things, we had Christine Frank, who's a professor at CU Denver here, and she came from Notre Dame, which is one of the very few architecture schools in the United States which teaches the importance of building along with architecture. And going kind of back to some of the historic roots from Europe and all that, where architects were kind of master builders, and they learned a lot of that by building. Well, now you've got the benefit of technology where you can utilize the technology and BIM modeling like you're talking about, and then be out in the field. So yeah, all of that work, practically speaking, on and in construction is so important, because then when you're dealing with a contractor, you're dealing with the client, you're talking in a language everybody understands, you know their language, you know what their hot spots, what their challenges are, what they're going to look at when they see your plans. And so it just becomes a lot more efficient and a lot more productive for everybody.
And one thing to add, if you are starting your own business, and how people are so important, is that it's not just you. And I think you should know that there is going to be a team. So the guys here are going to look after you for your windows and doors. The structural engineer is going to look after you. The contractor wants to be your top three. So a lot of times he will help you. We have had times where they just throw you under the bus. You're the worst guy imaginable. All that happens. but just know that those relationships will help you out.
Yeah, and know that this is a small industry. So if you start throwing people under the bus, be careful what and how you do that. And one of my first mentors in the building industry, he goes, Devin, do anything you can to never burn a bridge, because it'll always come back to haunt you. So just think about that, contractors and architects listening out there, whatever channel you decide to go. So in closing, I do want you guys to peel back a little bit more about the tiny house, and we'll put some show notes on all the cool stuff you guys have talked about. So kind of walk us through the coolest design of the tiny house to paint the picture of this crazy tiny house trend out there. I don't get it, but maybe I'll understand it more after you talk about it.
So our tiny house wasn't to live in. It was more to party in. And basically what I think...
I like, now I'm intrigued. Yeah,
exactly.
So, a whole new market.
We're big football fans, and tailgating is huge. I cannot show up early enough to a game. If I'm only 4 hours early, I am late in my mind. It's really upsetting. We'll be driving and there'll be traffic, and honey's like, don't worry, we're early. I'm like, no.
You guys have
like,
to come to my seat.
You don't understand,
we've
got to be there 5 hours early.
So the first tiny house that we built, it has that whole glass wall, and on that glass wall, we thought it'd be perfect to make a kitchen. And that kitchen, windows open up, and then the bar extends from inside to outside. So whoever's making drinks, making food, can be on the inside. And normally it's my wife or something like that, and we can be hanging out on the deck, drinking and having a good time. So I think that is one of the coolest features.
And that is on an HGTV show?
Yeah.
We are episode 13 of season 1, Tiny House, Big Living. You can check it out on iTunes, Amazon. I think you just Google it.
Yeah, we'll have links on the show, our show notes page as well, to make it easy for people to link into that.
Yeah. So being on HGTV was that was probably one of the biggest things we got. The benefit we got from being on that television show was it's just reoccurring every 2 weeks advertisement for us. We didn't get paid a dime to be on the show. It actually cost us a lot of money to build the tiny house. But then the tiny houses, that first tiny house led to us building two more last year for a Fortune 500 company, in which the profits we took from that allowed us to purchase the piece of land that we're now going to develop. So it's kind of all like roll into one big ball.
Nice. Very nice.
Excellent. So in closing, if there's one thing that you guys want the audience to hear, I'm going to give you both a couple minutes to talk through and advice. If you go to your guys' podcast, I love how you have somebody call in and talk about your biggest...
Worst and best advice.
Worst and best advice. So you always want to give something, some golden nuggets to take to the marketing bank to grow your business. So let's start with... Alex, what's that one thing you want the art of construction world to hear?
So we already talked about building from the fundamentals. I think that's key. But since we already discussed that, I would say give. Give, 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 give. So how we taught at CU, we just asked them, hey, how can we help your students? That was it. Everything, even with the podcast, exactly what you guys are doing here is you're just giving away the knowledge. You're letting it out. We're giving, we round numbers, but we give you real numbers. And everything kind of circles back and comes back to you, just like that tiny house where it cost us a lot of money to initially do, and we were doing it for free, but it did come back in the end. So just give.
Awesome. Check out the book Go Giver. It's a great book in reference to that. All right. Ender strong, my friend.
My advice would be, do not be afraid to put yourself out there with your passion. So I think everybody on planet Earth has some sort of passion. I think we're all put here to be unique people and give back and be part of this global community. And I think don't be afraid in the age of the internet. It's so easy to make a website. You can do it for under $10. Maybe even you can even do free versions of that. You can make a podcast. We're obvious people of that. You can write a blog. You can go on social media. You can start things. You're an interesting person, and don't be bashful about it, because just like Alex said, if you give, you're going to get back in return.
Give and get. Thanks, guys. Thanks for coming in and tell us your story.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having us.
Hey, Tribe. I'm Devin Tilley, one of the hosts of the Art of Construction podcast, a podcast specifically designed to help you contractors and architects grow your business by explaining the awesome world of construction. After teaching an audience that has grown to over 40,000 people, it's time to expand, baby, so let's add video to the platform. Each Monday, we will be bringing you a new video on some of our favorite projects and telling you all about the art of construction process. Make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel today so you don't miss any of it. Come on over and have a fireside chat at theartofconstruction.net and be part of the tribe. See you next week on The Art of Construction. What a fun conversation, and a couple guys that are really kicking butt out there in the field, and I'm excited to continue and listen to their podcasts and have them listen to ours and really help spread that knowledge of wealth. Fun stuff.
No kidding. And for me, the exciting thing is that of all the shows that we've had and heard about so many of the elements of design and building and all the critical components, these guys are doing it all when you think about it. I mean, they're practicing through the BIM process to get everything as accurate as they can, like we always talk about, getting things correct on paper, save time, money, and heartache and frustration and all those things. And they're doing that. They're providing great information, instructing architecture students at CU Boulder. And so, yeah, just really interesting, information to share out there.
Yeah, heck yeah. I commend you guys. Good job for following your passion and going after it. I hope someday, maybe Kevin and Devin, Art of Construction, Mountain View, whatever, as we're building our tribe, I'm glad you're part of the tribe, and maybe we can be an F something with you guys, because I love to be part of a tribe with you guys that are creative, thinking, moving forward, and really understanding and building science and how to put it all together. So
absolutely,
we're cheering you on here at the Art of Construction and honored for you to be part of our tribe.